noticed from the some of the questions that fellows were asking last time that you might be working very hard, but it might be somewhat inefficient because there's some usodos that you don't have yet about the Mussar process, and I think we ought to make sure that we get that straight. Mussar is not a process of yesh mi ayin. Mussar is not a yesh mi ayin process. Let me explain what that means. Yesh mi ayin means that Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he created the world, he created something from nothing. That was the last time anybody created anything from nothing. Every creation after that point has been creation of something from something. When you want to work in Mussar, the process of working in Mussar has to be working from something to something. It can't be creating a nothing from something. You can't do a yesh me'ayin. Which means you can't take something that's true, you can't take a chazal, and somehow make it your own as a sort of a creation of yesh me'ayin. There has to be a direct link on two levels. One is on a seichel level, and the other is on a regesh level. Let me explain what I mean by that. The seichel level, I think most of you understand. And we've talked about it, hammered it home. I hope you understand it. If you want to get anything from any sort of chazal, you need to understand the chazal. Hopefully, we've talked about that. If it's fuzzy in your minds, if maybe that's pshat in the chazal, but maybe not. If it's not muchruch, if it doesn't absolutely, if the words don't demand it, then you're not going to get a seichel connection with the chazal. That's first step. It's not a yesh me'ayin on a cognitive level. It is a connection. There's an intellectual connection, a seichel connection between what I think and what the Torah thinks. That's the first step of the process of making the connection. I now understand something. I now understand on seichel level. I now understand something that I didn't understand before. I understand something that is contained in the Torah. And maybe what I understand demands something of me. Maybe it has certain expectations. Maybe it makes certain assumptions. Fine and well. The first thing is I have to make a seichel connection with it. I understand it. It speaks to me in a sense that I understand. It's logical to me. It makes sense to me. The fact that it's in there in the Gemara, or it's in there in the Ramban, or in the Sfarno, that's very nice. The whole room is full of nice things. I'm willing to gamble that we're sitting here karov la'emes. We're sitting here close to a great deal of truth. It's meaningless. First thing to do with the chazal is there has to be a seichel connection to it. The next, which is really what I want to focus on a little bit more perhaps today, is that there needs to be an emotional connection. Now, emotional connection means I need to know what I feel. And I need to know what feeling I'm looking to try to generate. And I need to be able to see the point of connection between the feeling that I have and the feeling that I'm trying to generate. That's where the Mussar process becomes a little bit tricky. Because what we're looking to do is we're not just looking to know the right thing from the Chazal. We're looking to react, which means on a feeling level, we're looking to modify feelings. Rachmana Liba Boy, the story of Mussar is about modifying feelings. Now, obviously, in order to modify feelings, I first need to know what it is that the Torah wants me to feel. For that, I need to understand the Chazal, and I need to understand it well. And if it's fuzzy in my mind, then I don't really know what it is that the Torah wants me to feel. But having said that I know what the Torah wants me to feel, and now becomes the personal process, of course, understanding it is also a very personal process, But there's a very personal process of connecting on the feeling level. For that, I need to know what I presently feel. The same way that I have to know my Havamina on the Seichel level. I have to know my Havamina. What did I think before? For example, in this week's Parsha, we find that the B'nai Levi didn't sin. Not a one. None of the B'nai Levi sinned. Say Chazal, why didn't they sin? Because they were relatives of Moshe. B'nai Levi, I'm not sure. Closer cousin to Moshe than I am. A closer cousin. They all didn't love Moshe Rabbeinu. So apparently a feeling makes a difference. They felt a little closer to Moshe Rabbeinu. I need to know what my feelings are. What do I feel? What was my Havamina feeling? Now, when you want to go a Havamina feeling, you have a place to go. You can't go to your Seichel and say, what did I think? You have to go to your feelings and discover, what did I feel? Is in order to work the Havamina, you have to go to your feelings and say, hey, what did I feel? For that, you need to have your finger on your pulse to know what you're feeling. And if you ever want to, in a moment of weakness, if you asked me to summarize the Musar process, I would tell you it's about what you feel, not about what you think. The real Musar process, is what you feel. Real Yiras Shamayim, the concept of building Yiras Shamayim, is about feelings, not about thoughts. You absolutely can't get to your feelings or modification of your feelings if you don't have a sense of direction of where you want to go. For that, you need Chazal. But the story is about feelings. And for that, you need to know your own feelings. I'm hearing from some of the questions that the guys are asking that you're trying to build a true and correct feeling based on an understanding of a Chazal to go after what I'm supposed to feel. It's like going after the maskana of a sugya, or going after the bottom line without, what did I think in the Havamina? So too with Musar, if you want to get anywhere in Musar, you need to start with, what do I feel? And that is unfortunately tricky. Why is it tricky? It's tricky because of a little nasty thing called gaiva. A nasty little guy called gaiva. And what gaiva does is it says, ugh, I would feel that. I'm entirely above feeling that. That's gaiva. Gaiva generates a feeling of ugh. So sometimes we think of gaiva as generating ugh about other people. And sometimes gaiva generates an ugh about ourselves. And the ugh is so strong that I go into a denial mode where I do not take into account what I actually feel. That requires a certain degree of Yiras Shamayim to almost begin the Musar process. The Yiras Shamayim to want to know, what do I actually feel? You need Yiras Shamayim to build Yiras Shamayim. That's a little tough. That's like getting a job where you need experience in order to get a job. It's a little bit not fair. Every job, entry level job, and you need experience in order to get the job. So everybody's trying to cook up a way to get experience so they can get a job that requires experience. But you need, to a certain extent, you need a certain degree of Yiras Shamayim to be able to build Yiras Shamayim, which is the honesty of being able to acknowledge, that's what I feel. So who said that I couldn't feel that? Who said that's beneath me? Well, I'm not allowed to be human. Who said that was beneath me to feel that? Yeah, that's what I felt. Or that's what I feel. So gaiva prevents us blocks us from seeing reality for what it is. So what do we do instead? Instead, we jump to try to go to this new reality. We're going to go to this new reality because we know that's right. You know, we worked it out. We worked out the shmooze and we understood. We said, we know where we're supposed to be. So we jump to this new reality, but it has no connection to us. Because, as I said, it has to go from a havamina to a maskana. It has to go from me to it. It has to be a process of going from what is to what should be. That process of going from what is to what should be necessitates having a clear feeling of what I do feel. So, as I said, many people are walking around in denial, not because they're just emotionally out of it. I mean, there's a lot of that too. But it's not because they're emotionally out of it. It's because there's a little zvuv, a little fly called gaiva in the world. And that little fly called gaiva says, don't look at what I do feel. Leave it alone. Leave it alone. Here, let's start with a nice clean slate. Let's start with what I should feel. Okay? Can we start there? That's nice. It's neater. It's nicer. It's better. It's really where I'm looking to go. Generally speaking, if you ever want to know what anger really is, anger is trying to change something that I haven't accepted. Anger is trying to change something that I haven't accepted its reality. When the cup falls on the floor and it breaks into 700 pieces, who pushed Miriam into the table? What exactly are you asking? It shouldn't have broken. Yeah. But guess what? It did. And now is the time to react to the fact that it did. Check the kids to see that there's no kids walking around without shoes. Get the broom. Sweep it up. Yeah. If you want to make your little speech later on about pushing cups a little further away from the edge, fine, if you think that'll be useful, by all means, fine, whatever. Make the table a little bit steadier. Whatever you want to do, that's all for tomorrow. None of that is for right now. For right now, cups and 700 pieces on the floor, now's the time to respond appropriately to the reality. Denying reality, meaning trying to change reality without accepting the reality, is going to lead to, or if not, even almost the definition of anger. So we get angry at ourselves for not having done what? For not having reflected what we now know to be true. I know something to be true. May I learn the Chazal. So I know something to be true. Now I want to be that way. Okay. There's nothing wrong with trying to be that way. That's what we're supposed to do. But the starting position is not the end. The starting position is where I am. The starting position always has to be what I do feel. And that requires a certain measure of honesty and openness to be able to acknowledge. Yeah? This is a chiddush, both on a seichel level. It's a chiddush that's where I need to be, in terms of now I understand where the Torah is asking me to go. And it's a chiddush on the feeling level, because that's not what I feel. Please.
It seems to me that the reason why the Rebbe is putting so much emphasis on us acknowledging, realizing where we are now, is that so that when we make the step, it's a real step and it's not too big of a step. So it's a step that we can actually hold on to instead of losing. Is that correct or no?
I would suggest that without knowing what I do feel, there is no step. It's forget too big or too small. You have done nothing. I've played a game of make believe. It's all just shadow boxing. I've played a game of make-believe. I've put this image of myself up on the wall, and I bowed down to it. And I did nothing, because I haven't actually moved myself from what I feel to where I'm supposed to be going. So I don't know if it's too big or too small of a step. The only way you can do it is with what you feel. And if you ever want to know what you feel, check to see your sense of humor. It's a nice way to know what you feel. See what you find makes you laugh. You want to be a little more bold? See what makes you sad. See what gets you upset. meet yourself in your sense of humor.
Can you give an example?
Let me give an example that doesn't relate to anybody in the room at all. If you look in the Hakdama to the Levi Leo, there's a fascinating little account there about a dibbuk. Not something you'd expect in a literature sefer, but there it is. It's a fascinating account of a dibbuk. Interesting story. A woman made a commitment to her husband to help him, that she would work and he would learn, started a store. He was very clever with numbers, so she started asking him to help out with the books. How about this? How about that? Before long, he became a merchant. It was just every time, it was an hour here, it was 2 hours here, and then before long, he was running the business. Shamayim, some discussion. I don't know exactly what those discussions are about. Apparently, the mother of this girl asked that she not be put to death for having not fulfilled her commitment, and instead she was allowed, the dibbuk was allowed to invade her, and the dibbuk was in this woman. They brought the dibbuk to a makubal. The makubal confirmed that, in fact, this is the real thing. The makubal spoke to the dibbuk. This is all recorded in the Levi Leo. I mean, we're not, you know, this isn't coming out of some, you know, Hasidic Shemaisa book where you're collecting.
What's a dibbuk?
A dibbuk is a lost soul. Ah. A literal definition of a lost soul. So, this dibbuk has invaded this woman. The makubal asks, what are you feeling? Because the makubal knows what to ask, I guess. You know, he knows how to ask dibbuks. So he asks, what are you feeling? And the dibbuk says, if I go out of this body, the malachim are standing here next to me. The malachi chavala are standing here ready to pounce on me. The avenging angels are there, ready to pounce. So everybody in the room starts shaking, and the makubal says, what's their names? What are their names? So the dibbuk names the malachim, and the makubal says, it's a dibbuk. Now, up until now, it wasn't a dibbuk. Talking out of the stomach of the woman, this voice, you know, but he knew the names of the malachim that were next to him. So the Malach Chavala, they got that right. So he's a dibbuk.
He was talking out of its tummy.
He was talking out of the woman's tummy. It was where the voice was coming out of the woman's tummy. So, and he's enormously, enormously frightened by the sight of these malachim, Malach Chavala. The dibbuk is extremely frightened. And then in the middle of this whole scene, the dibbuk begins to speak nivel peh.
Sorry?
Obscenities. The dibbuk begins to utter horrific obscenities that everyone in the room, writes the Levi Leo, everyone in the room had to cover their ears. So they turned to the dibbuk and they said, here you are afraid, you know, Pachad Mavis, you know, your fear of the Malachim is gripping you. How do you do that? So he said,
What's wrong? What's the kasha? Because he's giving himself into
in the cemetery. In the cemetery, are you able to kibitz? Okay, so if you're able to kibitz in the cemetery, maybe it's a little bit harder to kibitz in the middle of the emergency room. And you know what? Maybe it's a little bit harder to kibitz when you're the one on the table in the emergency room. You know, it's like, he's seeing it. At a certain point, you become overwhelmed with the seriousness of the moment. And he's nibble peh, you know, and he knows that these malachi chabal are coming to get him for this. This was his crime. And the malachi chabal are standing there.
That was his crime. Was he for uttering of?
He was. Yeah, he was a bad boy. Apparently forgot to do tshuva before he died. And he even explained, a couple asked him, why didn't you do tshuva before you died? He explained why. Okay. He was too stunned. He had fallen off a wagon. He was too stunned. Didn't have a chance to do tshuva before he died. Okay, fine. So they asked him, so, well, I don't understand. They're standing here, you know, and you can you see them. And like, took nibble pet. So he said, you folks don't understand. I used to enjoy that when I was alive. I'm never going to be able to stop enjoying it. Even though I'm going to get punished for it every single time I do it. That's me. The only place to change what I feel, the only place to change what you feel, is in the world that you're in, not the world that I'm in. The world that I'm in, I'm fixed in my feelings. Those are the feelings that, you know, those are the feelings I left the world with. Feelings I leave the world with are the feelings I have forever. Those are my feelings. No, so stop having those feelings. You can do that, I can't do that. I am permanently fixed in the feelings that I had at the moment that I died. That's why feelings are so central to the story. Because that's really what we are. That's who we are. And that's why I say, check your sense of humor. Check to see what brings a smile to your face. What gets you to laugh. And what gets you to cry. Because that's who you are. That's who I am. It's very spontaneous. It's very natural. It's an easy check. A scary story once. Scary story. The Altar of Slavutka was known for taking people apart and putting them back together again. The reason we don't do what the Altar of Slavutka did is because we know how to take people apart, but we're not terribly good at putting them back together again. But the Altar was terrific at taking people apart and putting them back together again. And he never let up. On the Talmud, he never, ever let up. If he thought there was something that needed to be improved and fixed in the Talmud, he was still fixing the guy till whenever. So there was a fellow who came back who had left the yeshiva, who had left Slavutka to become a rav in a town in Europe. Do you know what that means, to become a rav in a town in Europe? You can't begin to imagine. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal was a rav of a town that I'm not sure if it always had a minion. Rav Yaakov was a rav of a town that didn't always have a minion. It was Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky. It was a budding Talmud. It was a superstar, a budding superstar. It was a rav of a town that didn't always have a minion. That was to be a rav in a town in Europe. So this fellow came back to the yeshiva to visit. Now in Slavutka, you didn't just get an aliyah because you hadn't gotten an aliyah in a while. You got an aliyah based on rank. And it didn't matter if the same people got the aliyah every single week. It didn't matter. That was fine. Like the Kohen, who was the biggest Talmud Chacham in the yeshiva, he got Kohen 4 times a week. 5 times a week. 6 times a week, if the time is, you know, he was the Kohen who got the Aliyah, you know, and if you moved up in rank, so then you could get an Aliyah. And the Altar assigned the Aliyahs. Legendary stories about how he assigned the Aliyahs. The Altar assigned the Aliyahs. So when this fellow came to visit at the yeshiva, he told the Gabbai to give him Glila on Tuesday, to give him Glila on Thursday. Not exactly Shishi on Shabbos. Fellow went to the Altar and he said, look, for my own cover, Chas v'Shalom, I don't need anything for my own cover. Wouldn't it be important for the Talmidim to have a certain respect for a Rav in a community? Talmud asking the Rebbe. Altar said, you want covered here after what you did? After a long pause, he got up the nerve to say, what is the Altar referring to? He said, don't you remember that time that Plony, and he named the guy, Plony, in yeshiva, who was very, very engrossed and engaged in his learning, came into the Beis Medrash Shabbos morning and put on his tefillin. Engrossed as he was in his learning. And don't you remember you went over to him to tell him that it was Shabbos? And don't you remember you had a smile on your face? And you want covered here? You didn't fix that. That's still you, and you want covered here? He didn't give up on a Talmud until the last second, until there was no Talmud to give up on. He didn't give up. He was going to work on a Talmud. He had ripped them apart and put them back together. He and his obvious are rubbing the communities. If there, that was a feeling. He didn't point out to him some behavior. He pointed out a feeling. You're still laughing at other people's mistakes. And if you're still laughing at other people's mistakes, then you need to fix that. You're not done until you fixed what you feel. You fixed what you do is super important because it is the... First of all, because it's Ratzon Hashem. And second of all, because it's the springboard. Because Adam Nifal Kafi Pulosa. Because you fix what you do, you can get to what you feel. But you need to get to what you feel. You need to get to the point where it doesn't occur to you to laugh at a guy who's making a mistake. So it takes a certain amount of honesty to say, yeah, but I would. I would have laughed at the guy too. I may not have even gone over to him. I probably would have just sat there snickering. I might even have gone over to somebody else and elbowed him and say, hey, check that out. Look who's lost in space. And that takes a certain honesty. Now that's what I feel. That's my sense of humor. When I meet myself, when I look in the mirror, so the place I can look in the mirror, I'm the guy. I laugh at the guy who made a mistake. I laugh at the guy. Okay. That's why we're alive, Baruch Hashem. That's why we're not that dibbuk. Because we still have an opportunity to fix. But fixing requires having an awareness and an acceptance. Yeah, that's who I am. I that's who I am. Now, I don't necessarily am not necessarily working on all of those things at one time. I'm working on a particular chazal that I'm working on. But whatever chazal it is that I'm working on, it needs to be the point of connection from both the seichel level. Did I understand what the Chazal is demanding of me? And second, on the feeling level, do I know where I'm feeling and what would it feel like to feel like this Chazal? Use your imagination. What would it feel like to feel like this Chazal? So let's take an example. In this week's parsha, we find out that Moshe Rabbeinu saw that the people was parua. Parua. That means that they were wild, out of control.
Naked
or uncovered? Okay. Good. Naked. Not a bad.
I thought that was scroll translation.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure that there are Mepharshim that understand it that way. And Moshe Rabbeinu breaks the luchos. Ramban says because they had given up the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. They immediately took back the leadership of Moshe Rabbeinu. As soon as Moshe came down, they immediately took back the leadership. Well, Ramban says, but it was an interruption. And interruptions last forever. So, what would it feel like? What would it feel like to feel as though I'm concerned about even slight interruptions in love relationships, in Avodas Hashem, in Yiras Shamayim, in love for Torah? What would it feel like to be a hands off of even a slight interruption? Oh, I gotta go use my imagination to know what that would feel like. Okay, now I knew the tricky part. What do I feel about little interruptions? And then I forget what I feel. Let me work hard on not wanting any interruptions.
Wait, what do you mean by interruptions?
There was a blip on the screen in their acceptance of Moshe Rabbeinu as their manhig. There was a blip on the screen. Shevet Levi didn't have that blip. The rest of Klal Yisrael had a blip on the screen. That blip turns out to be the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu had to break the luchos. Because once they had that blip, he saw that he would not be able to bring it back. The other reason why, if you look in the Svarno, Vayaras Egel Mecholos, you'll see that Moshe Rabbeinu did it because he saw that they were happy. They were happy doing the Egel. They were happy. All of these things point to, oh man, you mean you can't be happy about an Avera. It's like it's a whole different thing, doing an Avera and doing an Avera happily. It's a whole different world. Or, a blip, without a blip, all these things, there's a wonderful chazal. So you have to go in, look inside, look in the Ramban, study the Mefarshim. I'm not here right now to delve into a particular Ramban or a particular Sfarna. I'm here to say, if I were to take that and try to think it through, what do I feel about this idea of non-stop, continuous relationship? Well, get honest with myself. I'm okay with blips. I don't see. I mean, I can hear why blips are not great, but I create blips all the time. Okay, that's what I need to do. I need to know where my feelings are about blips, because the topic is blips. So I need to know, what are my feelings about blips? And I'd say, you know what? This particular chazal, I'm not even in the ballpark of listening to this chazal. I can't even get to a point where I can discover any part of myself that in any way concerns itself about blips. This is not where I'm supposed to be working yet, because I don't have any feelings at all about blips. That's an important discovery. Because whatever chazal I'm going to be working with, it has to be a chazal that, you know what? Oh, I can deal with that. I'm talking about sense of humor. I could deal with that. I'm aware that I laugh at an off-color joke. I'm aware of that. And then I get a chazal that tells me that tremendous, tremendous destruction comes to the world because of nivul peh. Oh, it's okay. So the chazal is talking about an extreme revulsion from nivul peh. And where am I holding? Baruch Hashem, I've grown in this regard. I tolerate it without really like splitting my sides laughing. I still find it fun. Okay. Here's where I am. Baruch Hashem, I've grown. Used to be that I would fall off my chair laughing at a dirty joke. I don't anymore fall off my chair. That's tremendous progress. Tremendous, tremendous progress. Okay, and then we see the chazal are talking about revulsion. So on a seichel level, I can use this to try to let me see to understand what it is that chazal view as so revolting about nivul peh. Okay, can understand why chazal view that as being, you know, exactly what it is and what it does in the world and what dibur is and exactly why these things are meant to be kept kadosh, etc. Okay, that's rough.
Once we accept, we realize, okay, I've got this emotion, which normally, you know, I think it's not a positive thing, but I realize, you know, this is how I feel in a particular situation.
Good.
Should one then try and say, okay, I accept this, or one knows it's not a good thing.
Okay, acceptance is different than approval. You have to be able to differentiate acceptance from approval. It may not be good, but this is what I do. It may not be the right thing, but this is where I'm holding.
So enjoy it or not?
It's the fact. It's a reality.
No, but what he's asking is, then do I carry on still doing what I do that gives me the pleasure?
Intentionally?
Yeah, I'll seek it out.
Like I love
it's
dirty
pleasurable
joke.
I need a certain amount of pleasure to give me energy to live my life.
Pleasure that is mutter, pleasure that is asr.
This pleasure happens to be not so mutter.
Pleasure that is asr, so that I don't intentionally seek it out.
But once I've laughed, it's a dirty joke, for example, I get all cramped up, or does I say, you know what, I'm the sort of guy, that's where I am, it's okay, I'm still walking around with a big smile on my face.
Absolutely should be walking with a big smile on your face. Because now I know exactly, assuming that that's the avodah that I'm working on, I know exactly where I am, and I see the gentle, tiny steps of progression. Frequency, intensity, and duration. It's I laugh at it less frequently. I laugh at it less intensely. And my laughing lasts less long. So there's a celebration. Because I know what I feel, or what I felt, when my baseline, I know what I felt. I have a sense of where I'm aiming because I understand the Chazal. I've imaged even what it would look like to be a person who's revolted by this kind of joke, but that's not me. Of course, the process of engaging myself in that Chazal is certainly going to be one of the helps that will help move me in that direction. But it always has to be from where I am. It can't be, now that I know the Chazal, now I'm there. That's what I... And it, this is not meant to say, okay, take yourself off the hook, guys. You know, it's just wherever you are, that's where you are. It is, do real work. Real steps, as opposed to small steps or big steps are not the case, not relevant here. It's any steps. That's this whole process that we've been hammering away at, to know your Havamina, for example, in the Gemara. To know your Havamina. To know what you thought. Why is it so important to know what I thought? Just tell me what you thought. Tell me what the correct shot is. Don't bother with what I thought. The answer is, because without what I thought, there's no progression. I need to go from what I thought, break my head with what I thought, to work my way towards what I should be thinking, and sometimes I'll come up with some wonderful kashas on what you're saying. I just don't get it. I'm trying to go from where I was to where I, you know, where you're telling me I need to be, and boom, I you know, this doesn't make sense. That's where the best kashas come from. That's where real chidushim emerge from. From that process of struggling to go from where I am to where I need to be.
The mid is that we're not working on. So let's say you're working on, I don't know, the three stream different meters that you're working on. The ones that you're not, what should you let them slide, let them keep them at bay at?
One of the midos that we all are supposed to be working on is the general mida called Yirat Shamayim. It's a general mida of trying to be more God conscious. That general mida of increasing our God consciousness is the way that we're addressing those midas that we're not presently working on. I can't be everywhere at once. All that I'll do will just dilute everything down to a point of zero. But I'm not ignoring them. The way that I'm not ignoring them is by addressing the general sense of God consciousness. Will that fix all of them? No, but it'll certainly keep them at bay, and it may even move them all forward a little bit. There's a collateral effect of working on one mida, is that it tends to bring other aspects of the self to more shlemus as well. You work on one mida, it tends to have a collateral effect. So that's the, you know, there's, if it was, a person would say, I'm working on this mida, but I have no interest in Yirat Shamayim. God's not part of the story. It bothers me that I have kas. So I've decided to eliminate my kas. I've got all these tabulos and all these tricks and how I'm going to do it, and I'm going to eliminate my kas. So you're right. So all of his other midos are going to be sitting on the floor. And he'll see, no, I don't even know. I'm not sure if he does have collateral effect. Probably the collateral effect of being more in charge of himself he may have. Because if he's really doing it and he requires self-discipline, so then there'll be a collateral effect just of the fact that he's more disciplined. But in terms of overall midos improvement, but if a person is building it, one of the things that he's doing is just an overall reminder that he's doing of a God consciousness, so then that will be helpful even if he's working only on one midah. Rabosai, even in a sense of just building a general God consciousness, I need to ask myself, what turns me on? What gives me a little bit more God consciousness? What works for me? Thinking about nature, does that work for me? Don't ask somebody else what works for them unless you're looking just to brainstorm. I'm not interested in what works for them. What works for me, it might be world events, to see how the Jewish people, how it's so clearly out God's hand in the world events. What works for me is to see baby being born. What works for me is to see that my brain works and I'm able to actually find my way through Yerushalayim to Or Avram. You know, what is it that, you know, what turns me on? Because I need to build my God consciousness. That's me. I need to build my God consciousness. I don't care how somebody else is doing it. I mean, it might be useful, as I said, for brainstorming. I might pick up some ideas. But that's not how I can build my God consciousness. I need to build my God consciousness based on my own experience. Yes?
How does one know that what one is thinking, you know, when one is doing this kind of exploration, is not just a firm response that you're telling yourself nice things because it makes you feel good because you think you're holding somewhere?
Yeah, that's what Gaiva will do.
What's the test of whether it's real or not?
See if it laugh, if you laugh and cry over it.
Uh-huh.
See if you find yourself getting a little kind of excited about it. See if a certain chazal, if a certain thought, if a certain whatever gets you, you know, kind of feel excited about it. There are ways of building your excitement once you have excitement. But you can't create excitement out of nothing. You know, if you're rooting for the home team at the game, so then a beer and a megaphone and, you know, the team colors and the right seat, and, you know, all of these things can really help take that excitement and build it into an enormous, enormous excitement. But if you're not excited about the home team, and I hand you a beer and a megaphone and the colors and the seat, you know, and
now what?
Start screaming? And unfortunately, that's what I'm hearing the guys trying to do with their musr. Start with what does turn me on. I have to begin with a thought, a chazal, something that does make me happy or make me excited or make me sad. Something that does, I have to know that I felt something there. So if you feel something, then there's room for all of those trappings. The way there are ways of revving up a feeling. If you feel, let's say a person has a nice feeling when he comes to Shabbos. It's a nice feeling. There's certain menuchas and nefesh that he gets when he comes to Shabbos. So then what does he do? White tablecloth, nice setting at the table, good food, candles, all sorts of nice things to do to rev up the feeling. But that feeling has to start with, and it's nice to have Shabbos. So sometimes you'll say, if you do an external action and you know the feeling is in there, sometimes the external action can generate the startup of that feeling. Very nice. You know, if you know that the feeling's in there and you need to generate the feeling, then you do some of the outer trappings. You light those candles. You make a candlelight dinner with a nice, and you set it up nicely. And you do all these wonderful things. You put on some nice clothing and all these little trappings. And a feeling that is deep in you may start to emerge. But it's then that you got what to work with. You didn't do any. All you did by setting all the trappings was all in order to get a feeling started. If you get a feeling started, then you stoke the fire. The musr process is stoking the fire of a feeling that you have.
The Rav said, if you want to make yourself more bold, well, and then continue the sentence.
I stopped that sentence in the middle, eh?
No. I just forgot it.
Who remembers what we're
referring? What makes you sad?
What makes you sad? Yeah, not just what kicks your funny bone, but what makes you sad. What makes you angry? But more specifically, what makes you happy and what makes you sad is much better. Much safer.
You know,
yes?
Up until now, you were discussing how to like amplify, I guess, certain emotions that you have. So, if you're supposed to, what about like getting rid of, like caste? You mentioned like...
What does that mean, to get rid of
caste? I don't know. I'm asking, like, what would be the right question to ask, and then what would be...
Right. So, I have to know, A, how much caste I have. That requires looking at my actual reactions. B, I have to know what it would look like to be without kas. Next, I need to get to attach myself onto a chazal that'll help move me along from where I am to where I need to be. But as I said, most people are trying to get rid of caste before they've accepted that they have caste. Yeah. And they have to know their caste well, because if they don't know their caste well, they can't celebrate any movement in caste. They're going to get very upset next time they get angry. Why did they get upset next time they get angry? Because Gaiva was sitting there, right? What did the Gaiva say? Me? Caste? Oh. And so, but the fact they made real progress, because in frequency, intensity, and duration, his caste is down. But it's going to happen again, and it does happen again, and he doesn't know what to do about it. The answer is, wait, what do you mean? You're on the road. What's the problem? And the truth is, the reason he's not on the road is because his Gaiva doesn't let him feel where he's feeling and feel that he's moving.
Yeah, but wouldn't that upset, you know, prevent you from getting angry in the future? Like, I don't like feeling upset. When I get upset with myself for being angry, so I'll try not to get angry in the future to prevent being upset.
Believe it or not, kicking yourself does not get you to have the feeling less. Wow. Be amazed to discover that kicking oneself does not. It's a very, very short-term fix. It does not work well. Unreliable. As a matter of fact, I had somebody in my office recently who felt so badly about themselves that there was absolutely no progress. Because ugh is a gaiva feeling, and gaiva doesn't let you grow. When you have an ugh about yourself, so ugh doesn't let you grow. And you have, aha, now I know something about myself. What do I want to do with that? Where do I want to go with that? Microsoft, right? Where do you want to go today? And first, where am I first? It's very nice to fantasize about where do you want to go today. It's a fantasy. I first have to ask myself, where am I today? Where am I? And I have to be okay with that without approving of it, without disapproving of it. Just knowing that it's there. Yeah, right now, this is what makes me happy. This is what makes me...
Well, everyone has one thing. I mean, it's quite enough, but it just keeps popping up. So, you just... What do you do then? You know it's there. You push it. Everyone can tell you right now. You feel it. You know it. You can tell it.
But I'm not sure how many people, even with the things that come up 100 times a day, aren't doing... Heaven again.
They are.
So that's pure Gaiva.
You think?
Look, listen to it. Listen to the sound of that. Ugh, that's not me. Shouldn't have done that. Ugh, that's me. Ugh, can't believe I did that. Ugh. Wait a second, why can't you believe I did it?
What are you meant to do? You meant to be happy? Oh, thank gosh. Oh, gosh, I'm fooling again.
You have to listen to Alka-Seltzer commercials.
Really?
Okay. Alka-Seltzer commercial goes like this. I can't believe I ate the whole thing. You ate it, Harry. You ate it. I can't believe I ate the whole thing. You sure did. Here, take two of these. Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. The solution will not be tested. The solution will not be tested until there's an acceptance of the problem. So long as he's sitting there saying, I can't believe I ate the whole thing, he's not taking the Alka-Seltzer. He's not even looking for the Alka-Seltzer. He's just sitting there kvetching.
So you're saying, get off depression, get onto positive.
But the depression is a product of Gaiva.
Yeah.
I cannot accept the fact that I ate the whole thing. I love overeating. That's me. Okay? I'm an overeater. You don't have to go around the room with, you know, my name is Ephraim and I'm an alcoholic. It doesn't necessitate, you know, true confessions. But it does require a sense of, this is who I am, this is what I feel, this is what gets a reaction out of me, and this drat, ugh, did it again. Why shouldn't you do it again? What was the havamina not to do it again? Because I dratted it last time? Because it didn't ugh last time, so I'm not going to do it again? You know what the ugh did? The ugh scratched it off the record. That's what my guy did. The ugh scratched it off the record. Now I'm starting to scratch. So now I can do it first time. That's what the ugh did. The ugh is a very clever device. To scratch it off, ugh. Okay, gone. Now I do it the first time again for the next hour. I do it for the first time. How many times did I do it for the first time today? Oh, about 40. But every single one was the first time. Because every single time, ugh, did it again. There's no process in that. There's no process. It's pure gaiva. There's no process there. Because I'm not going from what I do feel. I'm not learning from. Gaiva always prevents us from learning from our mistakes. Gaiva prevents us from learning from our reality. Because I don't want to accept the reality, because the reality is not nice. It shows that I'm not such a nice boy. So I don't want to accept the reality. So gaiva prevents me from accepting the reality. It blocks it. Ugh. Okay. Clean slate. Next. Do it again.
Can it be that the Gaitzer actually tells you that it's harata what you're doing?
That's right. Absolutely. You got it. Now, Yetzer Hara has got a long frock and says that, ugh, ah, that is holy. You're going to get scarred for that, ugh.
That's a chuva.
You do that, ugh. It's like Mark Twain quitting smoking. It's simple to quit smoking. I've done it hundreds of times. Right? It's not easy to quit smoking. I do it, and I do it again, I do it again, I do it again. So the Yetzer Hara convinces us that, yeah, exactly, beautiful. He says, that's a wonderful thing. And if you don't do that, you're a Russia. It's worse. If you don't do that, ugh. So what did you do?
You were happy.
I was accepting. Ugh, you're a Russia. You needed to do an ugh. I didn't do an ugh. Ooh, you're a bad boy. You're a Russia. Ooh, I'm a Russia. Huh? How come I didn't think of that? The answer is, Yetzer Hara knows that the day that you stop treating yourself like a Russia for having accepted it and moving forward is the day that you actually are embarked on a real road to change where you are to where you want to go. Yetzer Hara is not interested in that. Yetzer Hara will throw up any roadblock it can to prevent you from actually making a change. And usually it's a roadblock that sounds frum. If you didn't do the ugh, then you aren't frum. And you're not God-fearing. You're a Russia. Because you didn't ugh. And the answer has to be, there's another approach to change that is not about ugh. It's about, this is where I am. Let me assess whether or not I'm moving forward in terms of frequency, intensity, and duration. How are my feelings doing? How are my feelings doing as my feelings move along?
He's saying, don't suppress it, really acknowledge it, but then and take it from there.
Right. Once you've acknowledged it, then it's like a havamina. Once it's like a havamina, you have what to work with. I have what I am feeling. I have the chazal, a clarity in the chazal as to where I need to be going. I visualize where that chazal is. In the same way that I try to work my way from a havamina to where, which is what I thought the Gemara says, to what I'm trying to figure out now, where how Rashi understood the Gemara, which was different than the way I understood it. I'm trying to work from where I till there. So too, I'm trying to work from the feeling that I am starting with to the feeling where I'm trying to get to. So that becomes a real process as opposed to, ugh.
Maybe a suggestion for next time the Rav comes is that how to get from the Havmina to the Teretz and the Seichel. I can hear the Seichel, but the emotions are... How do you get on this journey? How do you take the Alka-Seltzer?
It's an excellent, excellent point. You need to find the part of you that does get excited about the right Mida. You may have 90% of you that laughs at a terrible joke at somebody else's expense. But there's 10% that is really very, very happy when somebody else is successful. Really happy. Not just, you know, put on this little nice little face. 10%. I do feel a little nice feeling when somebody's successful. And somebody,
parents or ladies or...
What's that?
It doesn't matter who it is. I mean,
right, anybody. I latch onto that and I can rev that up. By learning chazal and by thinking about it, that's the beer and the colors and the seat and the... You know, I can rev up that feeling. I have to discover not only my bad feelings. I have to discover my good feelings as well. I have to rev those up. To rev up the good feelings so that I have energy. Revving up the good feelings is the power to change. Not just revving up my negativity towards the bad feeling, because it really doesn't send me anywhere. I have to know where the chazal want me to go. I have to know the direction. I have to find a little bit of that within myself. There's a little bit within me, maybe very, very small, that really wants, let's say, Kedusha, or really wants Tahara, or really wants Simcha, or really wants, you know, a little bit. Find that little bit, and we can rev up that little bit by applying the chazal. But it's true that we need to talk about it more, about the process, but I'm leaving you with some, you know, just a thought to think about. Hatzlocha Rabba Rabosa.
Other issue.